Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamnini. James went and saw the Rachel Weisz-led off-Broadway revival of Plenty at the Public Theater last night, and I saw the national tour of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts here in Orlando. Just a real quick review of that show. It is lovely with some really tender moments, and it's obviously incredibly visually exciting. Adam Langdon, who plays Christopher, is absolutely astounding. The show probably spends a little too much time on the spectacle and is 10 to 15-ish minutes longer than it needs to be, and at times it's a little too cute by half, but overall a truly wonderful night at the theater. If you are in Central Florida or anywhere else that the tour is going to stop in its run, see if you can get some tickets because it's a really special night at the theater. You can read my full review on my Twitter or Broadway World Orlando sometime later today. Okay, yesterday we told you that we'd be doing things a little different this week because James and I are on such disparate, busy schedules, and we're going to have a few interviews here and there. Yesterday, it was a short hit that James did with Rachel Eskenazi-Gold, and today it'll be a conversation that James and I had on Monday night with actor Robert Stanton, who was one of the people behind the Fair Wage on Stage movement. You'll remember that on Monday's episode, I admitted that I didn't really know many of the details at play in the current equity off-Broadway negotiations, so Robert was nice enough to join us and give us a ton of details about the actor side of the discussion. Now, this is obviously a very important issue affecting New York theater, that these negotiations that need to replace the equity off-Broadway contract that expires on Sunday, whatever they come up with is going to impact off-Broadway for years to come. So we want to kind of give a balanced side of this. So if you are somebody who can speak to the theater company producer side of this negotiation as eloquently and intelligently and insightfully as Robert Stanton does, send us an email at either james@broadwayradio.com and or matt@broadwayradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe we can get the counterpoint on a later episode this week. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through just a handful of the biggest theatrical news stories of the day. Then we're going to get to this 19-20 minute interview with Robert Stanton. Okay, first up, yesterday Politico, and yes, I'm getting theater stories from Politico now, Politico reported that the New York Times had rejected an ad for the upcoming Bette Midler-led revival of Hello, Dolly! For its front page for president special. The front page had pictures of both Republican candidate Donald Trump and Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton, and the ad, which would have gone beneath those pictures, just directly beneath it, was the brainchild of Hello Dolly producer Scott Rudin. It was to say in big white letters on an all-red background, "It takes a woman." And then below those iconic lyrics in tiny mouse print, there was the theater name, show website, opening date, and other information. Probably correctly, from a journalistic standpoint, the New York Times, whose editorial board has endorsed Secretary Clinton, but that's a different part of the paper, the journalistic side thought that running that ad with a journalistic piece comparing the candidates just a week before the election probably wasn't in the best interest of the news division of the New York Times. So they told Scott Rudin that they couldn't run the ad, and rather than reworking it for another Hello Dolly ad, Rudin just simply replaced it for The Humans, which is what eventually ran. I've got to hand it to Rick Miramontes, the president of DKC O&M, the PR firm representing Hello Dolly, who was able to say slash write with a straight face, quote, "I don't know it was a pro-Hillary endorsement as much as it was to track the history of Hello Dolly with the Democratic politics of it." Rick, my man, come on. We both know what this was. This was Scott Rudin trying to pull one of his little jokes, his funny things, trying to poke somebody, trying to get a rise out of somebody, and this was either Donald Trump or the New York Times, and the New York Times wasn't having any of it. I personally, as I've said recently on this show, think that when Scott Rudin does these things that don't really hurt anybody, they're really funny. They're entertaining to me, so I laugh at them. So good for you, Scott. And it is true that Hello Dolly has a long history with the Democratic Party dating back to 1964, when the original star, the legendary Carol Channing, reworked the lyrics of the title song to support President Johnson's campaign. And she sang, "Hello, Lyndon." Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue like Hello Dolly does. Okay, sticking with the producer trying to needle people topic, yesterday, according to two reports, first in the morning from the New York Times and then in the afternoon from Deadline, Howard Kagan and producers of Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet of 1812 have offered to settle with Ars Nova over their billing issue, and Ars Nova has confirmed that conversations are ongoing. Of course, Ars Nova announced earlier this week that they were planning on suing Kagan and the producers over a breach of contract. Hopefully, these two sides can get to a resolution soon so that we can stop focusing on this silly squabbling and get to the fact that this show is turning out to be a hit in previews. It is doing over $1 million in its first few weeks of previews, and I don't know that everybody expected that. I think people expected Josh Groban's name above the title to generate some ticket sales, but here in the not usually super busy weeks of late October and early November, I don't think people are expecting it to do this well, especially when you can expect a bump during the holiday season. So this could be a bigger hit than people were thinking. So as soon as they have a resolution, we will let you know. So watch this space. Finally, in our little news section for today, yesterday NBC announced the first round of Broadway shows that will be performing at their 34th Street Performance Space during the 90th Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So far, we know that we will see performances from Roundabout's Holiday Inn, the revival of Cats, and a sneak peek of Hairspray Live, which will broadcast from LA just 6 days later. More Broadway performances will be announced in the coming weeks, and we will let you know when they are. Okay, now we're going to turn to our interview with Robert Stanton. He's going to give you a bunch of information. He's also going to tell you where you can get more details, how you can get involved. However, the best way to do that is fairwageonstage.org. Okay, here's our conversation.
With us today, we have a very special guest. Robert Stanton is with us. Robert is an actor on film, television, and stage, but he's here in the capacity today to talk about Fair Wage on Stage, what we talked about on yesterday's broadcast. So, Robert, thanks for joining us on Broadway Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'll give you a little background on the movement. We're a group of activists, a grassroots movement that's separate from the union, working alongside it in support of it during the off-Broadway negotiations. Those negotiations are ongoing. I can't comment on them. I can only say that Actors Equity Association speaks for all of us there. The movement started in someone's living room. We had a secret meeting of about a half dozen members. And we were all trying to imagine what the contract would look like if it were perfect. We had another secret meeting a few months later at the Players Club of about a dozen members. And the conversation kept circling back to low wages versus the very high cost of living in New York City. The union heard about these and reached out to us and questioned us, and then questioned a large number of members about what their lives were like under the contract. And people brought forth real tales of hardship. We began to, as the union advocated for us in negotiations, we began to start a social media campaign, which you may have seen on our website, fairwageonstage.org, or on our Facebook page, Fair Wage on Stage, or at Stage Fair Wage on Twitter. What we wanted to do was talk about what off-Broadway meant to us and what it was like living under the contracts. I've been working off-Broadway since 1985. I've worked these contracts for 30 years, about 20 times. When I started working off-Broadway, I made $250 a week. That was off-Broadway minimum. I was at the Public in Sheba doing a play by Keith Ring called Rum and Coke. But my rent at the time was $250 a month. So off-Broadway minimum now is $593 a week. If you adjust that $250 a week from 1985 for inflation to today's dollars, that works out to $560 a week. So we've been given a raise of about $33, a raise of a dollar a year, let's say, which is basically a flat line. But the cost of living in New York City has increased exponentially. My rent now is $2,100. Believe it or not, that is a great deal for a one bedroom in Brooklyn. It is below market and it is frozen. So it's really hard to live on this wage. The union did a survey of its members who worked the contract, and over 190 respondents said that their bare minimum, their nut, what they need to make every month, every week, is $815. That's after taxes, after commission, and after union dues. Now, remember, stage managers and actors, and we're both in the same union together, and the stage managers work a lot harder than we do, and we all work hard. We have 2.25% deducted from our paychecks every week off the top. And then actors have agents as necessity, and we pay them 10%. So actors, most of the membership pays 12.25% out of their checks before they're taxed. So our nut is over $200 greater than our gross income when we work the contracts. I've been really lucky because, as you said, I've worked in film, I've worked in television, and all of that income has supplemented my work off Broadway and in not-for-profit theater in the regions. I did a lot of commercials when I was young. I didn't have student loan debt because my MFA only cost $36,000. Someone starting out now, I don't know how they would do it. I've had two friends go bankrupt who worked contracts continuously. One, a friend of mine, did four shows straight, and he won a Drama Desk Award. And 2 days before he got the Drama Desk Award, he declared bankruptcy. And I have another friend who's in the middle of filing bankruptcy right now. And that's two friends too many who are continuously employed doing really hard work. So what we're after is what we'd love to see happen is a fair wage. For me, that means a wage where people aren't constantly insecure about how they're going to feed themselves and how they're going to shelter themselves, where they can work hard, full time in the city where they live and live lives of dignity and not quiet panic. So does that answer your question about the movement?
Well, I think that we understand that, and I think everybody agrees with that. We're just trying to, in the discussion yesterday, we talked about the realities of what is an off-Broadway budget. If you have a 199-seat right. theater and you have a $40 ticket, an average ticket price of $40, you're talking about $64,000 a week to support everybody in that production plus the rent. And I think that the rent of the theater is probably, you know, the number one issue in New York City.
Depends on the business model you're working with. And let me talk to that. Ken Davenport, who's an off-Broadway producer, this summer wrote in his blog that the Off-Broadway League contains, two entities under its umbrella, two different business models. You've got for-profit off-Broadway, and you've got non-profit off-Broadway. Two very different business models that use the same salary structure, which is strange to me, because, an off-Broadway commercial producer relies on box office, has to find investors and raise capital. Nonprofits rely on, box office is a very small piece of the pie. They really rely on in-kind donations and unearned income. So,
sure.
you talk about rent. So let's look at the public theater has a budget of $41 million. Joe Papp worked out a deal with the city where to get that Astor Library, they pay $1 in rent to the city every year. The theaters range, the large nonprofit theaters range from $6 million in budget to $41 million in budget. They do capital campaigns to raise money for bricks and mortar, to renovate their lobbies or their bathrooms, or in the case of one theater, raise the roof of the theater so that they can hang lighting instruments for beautiful designs, which are necessary to build a scene shop. As Kathy Schalfen pointed out in her video for us in that Fair Wage on Stage campaign, and she served on the board of a lot of these nonprofit theaters. She was proposing, I think it's a beautiful idea, a human capital campaign where, in fact, the culture of giving changes so that instead of raising money for something you can put your name on, you're actually raising money so that the actors who are providing the transformational experience, which is at the heart of theater, which is what we go to see, to, you know, which enables us to experience empathy and to participate in the exchange of ideas, so that the performing artists and the stage managers who provide that experience for the audience members can afford to live in the city. Now, then there's another set of theaters, which was under the Alliance of Not-for-Profit Theater Companies. And those, it's like, you know, that goes all the way from theaters like Women's Project, which has a budget of $1 million, up to theaters like Classic Stage Company, you know, New Group, at the top end, but the smaller theaters have a budget of like $1 million. You know, that's a theater that's not really financially stable. And the wage there, those wages for those theaters were in this, you know, in the current agreement, were from $361 a week to $598 a week gross. So you've got a theater with a $1 million budget on the same contract, you know, negotiating with a theater with a $41 million budget. It seems strange to me.
So Robert,
and then you've got them all together with commercial producers. Go ahead.
So I was just going to go off what you just said then. So I mentioned on yesterday's show when I brought up the topic that this is so far out of my area of expertise. And that's one of the things I said, is that I can't speak on this all that intelligently other than to say, just by default, I'm almost always on the side of the workers and the unions. So moving forward with, I don't know that you guys are necessarily putting forth an official platform as to what you want to happen, but it sounds like what you're saying there is that what would make sense from your perspective is that rather than having all the different types of not or of off-Broadway theaters, which we mentioned yesterday, it would make more sense to have them tiered like, you know, maybe some of the tour contracts are, so that depending on what level each theater company is, they have a different salary structure. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I mean, I'm not in the negotiating room. I don't know.
Sure.
I
understand.
I don't know how they're working it. I do know that, you know, and I want to talk about history too. I do know that historically, the reason there were these two different, you know, there was Antic and there was Off-Broadway in the nonprofit world was because these theaters that are not stable, the union wanted to protect them and to help them grow. And I think that all of the artists agree that we want to protect them and have them grow so they can graduate. You know, the public started out, you know, they were in an amphitheater in the East River, and then they had a truck that broke down in the park and they couldn't fix it. And, you know, and Joe Papp, Scrappy Joe Papp, fought a battle with Robert Moses and was able to keep the truck in the spot and do free Shakespeare and build a theater thanks to a generous donation from George Delacorte. And then it's grown into this $41 million enterprise. You know, I would love for that to happen to the Women's Project. And I think that, you know, we as artists regard these general managers and producers as our partners. I've worked with people, you know, on the other side for a quarter of a century. I've worked in the institutions for 31 years. These are people with whom I have relationships. So, I would love to see something that would enable not only for the theater to flower, but also the artists who do it to sure. live dignified lives. And I also think, and I think this is really important, I think it's essential to the survival of the movement, of the off-Broadway movement, because right now, the only way to do this is to be a trust fund kid, or to have income from film and television, or to work a second job or a third job while you're working full-time, or to go into debt, or to go into your savings. That isn't fair. I know that there is a way with a fine lines on the other side of the table that it can be done. And, you know, I'm not a producer. It's their job to figure out the budget. It's my union's job to stand up for me and my brothers and sisters.
So is the, and I know you said you're not in the negotiating part, that's the union's job. So in terms of what the Fair Wage on Stage movement is looking to do with your, and I love how you said secret meetings. I love that. That sounds so cloak and dagger. I love it. But I mean, when you guys had these meetings, was it just, let's get this issue out there so that not only the artists who are a part of this union, but also the people who love the work that the artists in this union put out understand this issue, so that maybe it, you know, creates a little bit of a dialogue so that people are able to understand it? Is that really the goal, is the awareness? That's what this campaign is really pushing for. And then you're saying, okay, Equity, you've got the onus on you to figure out how to make this work alongside the producers in the theater companies.
Absolutely. I would say that, I would say that, you know, you use the word protesting yesterday, or someone used the word protesting, and I had an objective. I objected to that because I would say that we're here to raise awareness. We're here to raise awareness. We're here to raise awareness among the audience members. We're here to raise awareness among our brothers and sisters of their worth, the actors and stage managers, because I think we have a tendency to internalize the narrative of the other side and to internalize the idea that there's this myth of scarcity, which I don't think is true. You know, you look at the economics in 2010, the Off-Broadway Alliance, an employer organization, said, yes, the average ticket price was $44, but $100 million worth of tickets were sold. No, I'm sorry, $100 million worth of tickets. So 2.28 million tickets were sold, and $550 million, over $500 million, was contributed to the local economy. And that's almost $100 million more than what they reported 2 years prior. And that year, we agreed to a wage freeze because, you know, the other side of the table, they were claiming that, I'm sure rightly so, that they were really hit by the economic crash. Again, you know, the artists, the union, we've always partnered with these theaters. We regard them as partners. So, yes, we want to educate the public. We want to educate our membership and galvanize our membership. And we hope to reach people on the other side. And that was why I was one of the people who contributed to a letter to management, for which we collected 1,105 signatures of rank and file members. And some of the greatest actors and stage managers who work off Broadway, you know, got to a place, or the position was gotten to them. 600 of those signatures are pen to paper, which doesn't invalidate the 505 more that are, you know, that were done digitally. And we did that in 3 weeks. And we've got an online petition now for the public. Anyone can sign it. And I hope you look at it at fairwageonstage.org/get-involved. And there you can sign a petition that's open to the general public. We collected, 2,000 signatures in 48 hours. We're well over 3,000 now. The petition went live just about 5 days ago, I think. I hope you sign it. And we can also give instructions on how to make contributions to the theaters and how to earmark your contributions for actor and stage manager salaries. This is for the not-for-profits.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. I love that. I think I don't want to speak for James, but I was just speaking for myself. I hope that whatever happens with these negotiations, that it is something that can honor the work that's being done, because I don't live in New York. James does live in New York. So when I think of New York, yes, I think of Broadway, but I think of some of the great stuff I've seen off Broadway. And that's really one of the things that gets me excited to come visit the city. And I hope that whatever these negotiations happen, that it's something that works for everybody and makes everybody's contribution to this really unique art form respected, because, you know, London's got the West End, but I would very, very, you know, I would just say the work that's done off Broadway is tough to find anywhere else in the world. So I would love to figure out some way that makes this work. So congratulations for all the work on that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on and giving me the platform to speak to your audience. I really appreciate it. It was delightful talking with you. And I couldn't agree with you more, by the way.
Well,
look forward
you.
To coming to an agreement that serves everyone.
Yeah. Robert, do you know if there's any time frame set forth yet?
Because the contract runs out at the end of the week, right?
The contract expires on November 6th.
And do you feel as though that there's going to be some sort of announcement forthcoming soon, or do you feel that it's a process that as long as everybody keeps talking about it, we can keep working on it?
I think, you know, I think it's, you know, the way I understand these things work, you know, if both sides keep talking, you know, they continue to negotiate past the deadline. I hope the story is producers give actors and stage managers historic raise. You know, I look forward to hearing that.
All right. So please come back and talk with us, and we'll keep everybody informed about what's happening here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate having me on. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening to a slightly unusual episode of Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMATT. And subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and or Google Play. I, and maybe James as well, will be back to talk to you tomorrow.